I'm part of pastoral staff. Once again, we are having a Q&A after today's message. For anyone who's a member, for anyone who's new, just stay in the theater. If there's 20 of you, awesome. If there's two of you, we'll have a great time. But just stick around in the theater after worship, and we'd love to do that with y'all. If you've been with us for the past few weeks, you'll know that on the Sundays, we've been going through a sermon series in the book of Exodus, and we reached the halfway point last week. And we mentioned that today we're going to be taking a pause, a little bit of intermission, to begin a new short series called Elders and the Church. And the reason why we're doing this is because our church, we're actually going through a special season where we're in the process of examining and installing our first group of elders. And for the past 2 years, I've been meeting with this group of people. We've been training, equipping for 2 years. Every other week, we've been meeting together. And so I feel I'm actually really interested to see how that plays out as we go through this process with our church. But we want to begin today to not just prepare those candidates, but we want to prepare our congregation. What does it mean to have leaders and elders in a church that's here? And if you're new to our church, and this is your first time you're hearing any of this terminology, like you have no idea what this whole thing is about leadership of elders in a church, hope today could be a very helpful thing for all of us in this room. And so we're going to look at a passage that talks about the subject we're going to be looking at. It comes from the letter of 1 Peter, chapter 5. It should be in your programs. We're going to be reading through the ESV version. So if you brought a physical Bible, it's going to be the ESV. And here at our church, we believe that when we read the scriptures, our God is alive and he is speaking. So can we all rise together as you look at this passage in 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 to 5. So this is the Apostle Peter, one of the 12 apostles. He writes this, starting verse 1. So I exhort the elders among you, as a fellow elder and a witness to the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you. Not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory. Likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility towards one another. For God opposes the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. This is the reading of God's word. Let me pray for us before we begin. Lord, would you, your spirit move at this time and wherever context we come from, when we take a moment to pause all the phones, all the news, all the distractions, may we be able to be still and to hear you speak to us. And may that be able to strengthen us the rest of this week and be able to give us, O Lord, a reminder of who you are and what you call us to do. In Jesus' name we pray, amen. You may be seated. It's May today, right? Is it April? Is it May? I think it's May. Man, it's already been a crazy year. If you think about 2024, kind of crazy. I mean, there's the war happening with Israel and Palestine, and that's kind of just hovering over all the news. I don't know if you guys heard college campuses, a lot of them, they're canceling their graduations because of the protests. Like, man, Gen Z, I'm so sorry for that generation. Like, you just don't graduate. Like, it's just kind of an unfortunate generation we don't get to celebrate. AI technology, that's just kind of a thing that's become new that people are talking about. We had a solar eclipse. I'm not sure how often that comes, but I heard it's every like 50, 60 years, and we had it in 2024. P. Diddy, he's in trouble. Who would have known that we'd have a scandal like that? I mean, there's just a lot of stuff happening in 2024, and I just know the worst has yet to come. This year is going to end crazy, not because I'm a prophet and I just foresee things. You know why I know it's going to end in a crazy way? November 2024. The elections are coming. Oh, man. I mean, our church is pretty cool. Like, if you're new to our church, listen, our church, I haven't really felt any type of political, you know, fighting that's going on here, but I just know on my news feed and my friends and on Twitter and social media, you're just going to see so much anger and conversation and dialogue. And no matter who your guy is, like, if you lean one way politically or not, no one's going to be happy. I just can't imagine a result at the end of November where someone's gonna be happy. And it kind of made me pause and realize, like, man, like, was it always like this, where whoever was president, that we are just like cynical and like don't give them the chance? Like, what happened to us? And I actually was looking this up and I realized, like, oh, this is actually an interesting phenomenon that our country is going through. The Pew Research, they did a survey and they looked at the ability of people's trust in institutional leaders, and they've argued that it is historically low. I mean, this is the research that's there. They said back in the 1960s, 80% of Americans said, I fully trust our leaders in this country. Then in 2000, 50% trust. In 2019, 17%. Man, what happened? something happened where we are at this historic low of trusting the institutional leaders around us. Why do we have such a cynical view? What is it about us that when we see somebody leading us, we have this resistance or this type of defensive wall or this type of skepticism that's going on? And there's many reasons, but I could just point out maybe a couple that's going on. I think one reason why is because we have bad leaders. We've experienced bad leaders. I mean, when you hear stories of like CEOs who have to cut wages across the board, but then they somehow get a secret bonus and their wages go up, you're just like, what the heck? Or when you hear politicians during quarantine, when they say quarantine everybody, and you see them partying like at a yacht or some type of birthday, you're like, what in the world? It just makes you lose trust in those who have power or authority over us. Another reason, though, is also because of the digital age. I mean, we live in a YouTube, TikTok age where anybody can have an authoritative voice. So long as you could brand yourself well, you could talk about any subject and you all of a sudden have a platform. And what happens is that when you have a society where anyone can have a platform, you democratize information where all opinions are kind of similar, and you disrupt the traditional hierarchies that society is built upon. And again, there's good in that, but realize what it's doing to our view of those with authority and those who are leaders. But also something that's going on, I'd point out, is individualism. We are a generation that grew up literally singing, "No right, no wrong, no rules for me." That's our songs that we are teaching our kids, and we see that as freedom. And the result is that we now live in a time where, for most of us, our default is, at best, we tolerate leaders, we tolerate those who have authority over us in whatever situation we're in, or at worst, we're cynical, we don't trust them, or we're critical of anybody who has some type of authority over us. And what's interesting is, it carries over that cynical spirit, it carries over from the world into the church. In the church, it is just as bad. I saw a Gallup poll that shows, do you trust the clergy? Meaning, do you trust your pastors, the leaders in the church? And man, really depressing, historic low. The trust that people have is like less than 40%. That means 6 out of 10 of you don't trust me. Like, you don't know if I'm being legit. And by the way, you know what the most trustworthy occupation is? Like they said, like, you could trust this person, everyone feels it. For some reason, it's nurses. Like, go nurses. Like, all of you, like, they just trust you. But pastors, they used to be up there. It's just not there anymore. What happened? I would argue it's the same reasons, that we don't trust people in the world. We've experienced bad leaders in the church. I mean, if you're following any type of news cycle, you just know, like, every week there's a new pastor that went through a scandal. There's a new documentary on Hulu talking about the downfall of a church because of something that the pastor did. I mean, we have Instagram pages called Preachers and Sneakers, where you see preachers having expensive sneakers. There's an Instagram page called Profit and Watches. We have pastors with these crazy watches. This watch, it's less than $70, so don't worry, guys. I'll never make it. But we have, like, Instagram pages that are there. You can check it out. That just shows these leaders in the church that are just kind of scandalizing people's money and using it for their own benefit. I know for some of you, you've experienced, if you grew up in the church, just like messed up spiritual leaders, and it really messed you up, so you just don't trust them. We also live in a digital age, and that's not make us immune because we're in the church. I mean, go to any podcast, go to any YouTube channel, and you can listen to all the sermons you want, all the Bible information that you have access to. Why would you need a spiritual leader in your life? You have all access to the Bible. Why even go to a church? And we also live in an individualistic culture where all of us were used to practicing spirituality by ourselves. I mean, when people visit our church, this is the two main things they tell me they're looking for. Like, what are you looking for in a church? They say, I'm looking for a good speaker on Sundays. I'm looking for friends. No one has ever come up to me going, hey, you know what I'm looking for? I'm looking for a pastor to pastor me. I have yet to hear that. And I understand, because we live in a culture where we are used to doing things by ourselves. At best, we'll do things together with people. But to lead us, that's just really contrary to the spirit that we are living in today. But let me ask you a question. What if I told you that it's good for you to have leaders in your life? What if I told you that it is good for your soul to have spiritual leaders? What if I told you that for you to learn how to follow Jesus, you need spiritual leaders to show you how to follow Jesus? If I told you that, I could imagine a couple responses. Some of you might be cynical because of all the stuff I mentioned before, bad leaders. You're just like, oh, I don't know about this. Some of you might be suspicious of me right now, like, this sounds cultish. You're saying I need to attach myself to some authority figure? Like, that sound makes you kind of cringe a little bit. And yet, if you're really honest with yourselves and you're willing to be vulnerable, I think there's a part of you, you really long for this. There's something deep down inside of us where, man, we really wish we could have people we could trust, someone to guide us, someone to counsel us, someone who like knows and cares for us. There's a part of us that we want to depend on people. And the reason why I think that's kind of a nerve if you're really vulnerable with yourself is because a lot of your wounds that you carry into this church, it came not just from peers, but it came from people who had authority over you. I mean, your parents. A lot of us, we have such deep parent wounds because they had authority over us. And they used it in a way that was very harming. Or some of us, we've had teachers or professors that just destroyed your confidence because they used their platform to really hurt you. Some of you have like bosses and managers that really just destroyed your confidence during a season of your life. I mean, all of us here, a lot of deep wounds we carry is from people we trusted to have authority and leadership over us, and they used it to hurt us. And it makes us guarded now. It makes us cynical. It makes us want to be independent. And yet the one way we can really grow and we could really heal is not just by doing it ourselves, but to have godly leaders, godly people who we could actually trust and who we could actually lean upon and who actually show us what it means to be a godly leader in our lives. The New Testament tells us who these leaders are. The leader that the New Testament points us to is actually one leader that we could trust. Jesus is that leader we're longing for. Jesus says he has all authority in heaven and earth. It's given unto him. And we flourish when we are under Jesus' care. But what's interesting is Jesus says, if you want to be part of his care, if you want to receive his care, he invites you to join his flock, to join what he calls the local church. And in this church, he appoints spiritual leaders to lead and to guide you. And these spiritual leaders, these are supposed to be folks who look far different from the world, far different than the pain that we experience, because these leaders, they're supposed to lead like Jesus, look like Jesus, be like Jesus. And when you have people who are like Jesus leading you, that actually isn't wounding, it becomes very healing. First Peter talks about spiritual leaders in the church, who they are, how they should lead, how we should relate to them. And the reason why is because through this leader, follower, church relational dynamic, you actually together in the mix of that become more like Jesus. And we're going to be talking about what that looks like. And this message, it's not just for those of us who are church leaders or those of us who are looking for church leaders, but we're going to see just general principles of how to be a godly leader, how we can follow godly leaders. And so if you're in any type of leadership position in your work, if you're a parent, if you're somebody in the church even, where you're leading something, this applies to us. But especially for those who are spiritual leaders in the church, Peter has a lot to say of what we are to look out for. So three things we're going to look at from this letter. Number one is, why do we need spiritual leaders? Two, what kind of spiritual leaders do we need? And lastly, how should we relate to our spiritual leaders? So why we need them? What kind do we need? How should we relate to them? First, why do we need spiritual leaders? The letter of 1 Peter, the Apostle Peter, he's writing to Christians in the first century, and they are experiencing persecution because of their faith. It's far different than the OC, where we could just go to church unhindered. Back in the first century, it was a big cost to follow Jesus, to identify as a follower of Jesus. They are facing hostility. And so Peter, this whole letter, he's writing about their sufferings, how hard it is, persevere. And all of a sudden, in chapter 5, Peter ends his letter by addressing a group of people called elders. And he exhorts these elders. Exhort means that he urges them. Look at verses 1 and 2, what Peter says. Peter writes, "So I exhort the elders among you as a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight." Many things we could say. We're just going to answer three questions when it comes to these verses. Number one, who are these elders that Peter is exhorting? Who is Peter talking to? And we're going to break it down a couple ways. The elders are the spiritual leaders of the church. In the New Testament, the way it worked were the missionaries, the apostles, they'd come to a city, they'd start a church like this, And before they leave, what would happen is they would establish elders in that church before they leave. They wouldn't leave until there were actually people who were elders there. And that you see that everywhere in the New Testament. For example, in Acts chapter 14, verse 23, when they had appointed elders for them in every church, the apostles, they appointed elders in the churches that they established. That was just a normative that happened in the book of Acts. In Titus chapter 1, verse 5, Paul is writing to Titus and he says, "The reason I left you in Crete was to set right what was left undone and, as I directed you, to appoint elders in every town." This was just the thing. The fact that a church doesn't have elders is really weird. It was normative back then for a church, for it to be established, to have elders. And the reason why is because the elders, they were the spiritual leaders. That's what elders were. And for a lot of us here in the OC, you hear like, okay, cool. What about the pastors? Because we're used to the language of pastors, and we think pastors are the ones who are leading the church. So what's going on? There's pastors, there's elders. What's happening here? And here's the second thing we should know. Elders, they equal pastors, and they equal overseers or bishops. We're not as familiar with the word bishop. If you come from an Episcopalian background, that might be more familiar, or a Catholic background. Some of you might come from a more Presbyterian background. We are familiar with elders. Baptists are like pastors. They're all, I would argue, the same thing. There are three different words describing the same office. Each title is highlighting something different about that office. Sometimes the Bible, when it describes a leader, it describes them as an elder. The Greek word is presbytero. It is a Jewish term for leaders, and this highlights the spiritual maturity of what this leader is supposed to be. Another word that's used is overseer or bishop, episkopos. This is a Greek term for leaders, and it highlights the leadership and direction that the leader offers. And the last word, a word that we're familiar with, is the term pastor, appointment in Greek. It is the Old Testament imagery for leaders that highlights feeding and nurturing and protecting a group of people. In other words, what the apostles are doing is they're using different terminologies from Jewish sources, from Greek sources, and some from biblical imagery in the Old Testament that all talk about a leader and saying, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. This is all what we're talking about when it comes to a spiritual leader. They all highlight the same thing. It's all the same office. It's one and the same. Members who are in this church, and we have elders here. You go, is that person? What's the difference between him and the pastor? They're the same. For those of you who know Vince Tong, he's not a full-time pastor. He works, but if he becomes an elder, he's a pastor. You want to call him Pastor Vince? Go ahead. It's the same thing. Because the office of elder, pastor, overseer, bishop, it's all one. Lastly, what we notice about elders is this. Elders, they should have an intimate relationship with Jesus. Notice Peter, he identifies himself as an elder. I'm writing to you because I'm an elder. And notice Peter says, and I'm an elder, and he doesn't highlight because I'm an apostle, or doesn't say because I'm so gifted, or I'm this older guy. Look what he highlights in verse 2. He says, as a witness of the sufferings of Christ. To be a witness, it literally means to affirm or to testify. To testify to something, in the Greek is actually martyr, so it's you're testifying at a price. It's like me saying, you know Sam Bay, Pastor Sam, he is a good guy. If you know, like Sam is a really good guy. How do I know that? It's not because I read about it. It's not because people told me about it. I know Sam. I could testify like Sam, and this is really, it's not just a sermon. He's a good guy. Very good guy, a dear friend. And I know this because I know Sam. I could say it with confidence, and I'm willing to even like receive feedback, like pushback for that because, dude, Sam, like I know him intimately. Peter's saying, I know Jesus, his suffering. I know it. It's so real to me. And it's not just information. It's like personal intimacy with Christ. If you grew up in a church, a lot of you are used to elders. They're elders because they've been at the church the longest, because they're the oldest, because they look like really professional businessmen. But Peter says, no, the main thing that makes someone a leader in a church is they are intimate with Jesus. They have a vibrant, intimate relationship with him. That's what an elder is. Now, second question, what are they supposed to do? What's the role of an elder? You know, for this, and this is a problem. When churches separate pastors and elders, like they think they're two different things, the problem is you think a pastor is someone who preaches and teaches and cares for all of you. So what does the elder do? And we think, oh, the elders, we just import our modern Western view of business leadership, and we think that's what elders do. They make decisions. They set policies. They're in that back room that meets monthly in some type of board meeting, and that's the main role. And that's why for a lot of you, the only time you, if you grew up in the church, you've only seen elders once a month when they give you bad news. That's kind of like almost the function of an elder. It kind of, this is the breakdown of the modern church, how we tend to view leadership. It's like this. The lead pastor is the president CEO, so I'm the president CEO. The associate pastor, Sam Bay, he's the vice president of this group. Members, y'all are shareholders. And so the elders are the board of trustees.
That's kind of how we view church. And again, realize how modern Western that is, this business model of how we approach church. And we have to ask ourselves, is this the way it's supposed to be? Are elders primarily decision makers who you rarely see? And Peter, like, that is just not what he talks about at all. There's only one verb, one action verb in this entire section when he talks about elders. You know what that one verb is? Look at verse 2. What does he tell the elders? Shepherd the flock. That's your role. I exhort you to shepherd the flock. In the first century, when you imagine a shepherd, you don't go, oh yeah, shepherds, they meet around a round table and they make decisions and important business meetings. That is not a shepherd at all. When you think of a shepherd in the first century, you think of someone standing outside, surrounded by sheep, guiding the sheep, tending the sheep, feeding the sheep, finding the sheep, washing the sheep. They're smelly like sheep. That's what a shepherd is. And Peter's like, yeah, that's you, elders. Shepherd the flock. Your main role is not to attend meetings and make decisions. Your main role is not for someone to just make sure the budget is working out okay. If your church does not know who the elders are, then there's something wrong with the elders here. The elders are meant to be with the sheep. The only way the sheep actually follow the elders is if they're familiar with the shepherds. And if the congregation has no idea, they have no relationship to who the leaders are, it's probably more modern Western business. It's not the church that Peter is imagining. I love how the way one pastor, named Tabidi, he says it like this. He says, quote, elders should smell like sheep. The sheep's wool should be lint in our clothes. We should all have just lint of all the members. Like, yeah, I just met with Kevin. I just met with Ina. I just met with James. Like, we just know how people are because we're sharing life with them. That's what the image that Peter has. The main role of a shepherd. Not the only role, but the main role that an elder has. Shepherd them. You feed them. You make sure you care for them. You make sure you are in relationship where you know what's happening to them. That's why that word, he says, exercise oversight in verse 2. Oversight is you're looking over them and caring for them. You're watching them, paying special needs and attention to them. And that leads to the last and final question, which is, why is Peter exhorting the elders to shepherd the flock? Why is he even saying this? I mean, if you think, so I know we're just looking at chapter 5, but if you zoom out, Peter this whole time was talking about how the Christians' churches, they're all suffering. They're going through a hard time. In fact, right before chapter 5, look at what it says. Chapter 4, verse 12, this is right before the chapter we just read. Don't be surprised when the fiery ordeal comes among to test you. So then let those who suffer according to God's will entrust themselves to a faithful creator while doing good. Hey, you're suffering? Dude, trust in God. Anyways, elders, it's like, what the? Like, why did Peter do that? Why shift from, like, suffering to, like, elders? And I think the answer is very simple. For you to navigate the difficulties of your life, you need shepherds. You really need people to help you with that. I was talking to my community group, and we're all talking, and a random question popped up, which is, what is the best and worst part of your job? So we have, like, doctors and lawyers and pharmacists, and everyone's sharing, like, the best and worst part of their job. And all of a sudden it got to me. We're like, hey, as a pastor, elder, what's, like, the best and worst part of your job? And I said, oh, that's actually really easy. The best part of my job as a pastor is I get to witness all the special moments of people's lives. Like, I get to hear, like, people's salvation stories. Like, I get to hear, like, in membership interviews, like, how you came to follow Jesus. I get to, like, it's amazing to, like, baptize somebody. Like, I wish everyone could just do that. Like, it's just an amazing feeling to experience that with somebody. I get to go to everybody's wedding. Like, once you get to, like, my age, the weddings stop. You go, like, once a year or so. Dude, I still go to, like, so many weddings all the time. It's so tiring. And yet, it is so life-giving because you just have this special moment just seeing people come in union. I get to see all the babies. Like, every baby, I have access to come, like, to go to the hospital and to visit the child. It's awesome. Huge blessing. The worst part about being a pastor elder is I have to see all the bad things, too. Like, man, the first time I hear people when someone's sick in their family, like, I hear about it. When someone is going through suffering themselves, like a miscarriage, or they're going through a diagnosis, I bear that burden. You ever watch Marvel, MCU? You're the Watcher. The Watcher, his role is just to watch all the bad things happen. I sometimes like the Watcher. I just see, I'm like, oh, there's all these bad things. When someone's going through something crazy, like, dude, this person's doing something crazy. I'm like, oh, I guess I have to talk to him. I guess I should talk to them. And it's never fun. It's never fun. And yet, this is why you need shepherds. This is what our soul needs. Friends comfort you. It's really helpful to have friends, but the best that friendships do is it comforts you. Family, they will support you. Like, they will never leave you. Even if you kill somebody, like, you still have your family. But elders, our main role is not to comfort you, even though we do that, so I hope. It's not to support you. But it's chapter 4, verse 19. We are there to help you trust in a creator while doing good. We're there to remind you of Jesus and his faithfulness in the midst of everything that you go through. This is why, as elders, we do this by teaching God's word to you, to prepare you for the navigations of life and the hardships. We do this by praying for you. We pray for you. That's what we're supposed to do. We want to counsel. We're supposed to counsel and even correct you when things are off kilter in your life. We're supposed to love you. In fact, there's an interview with this one shepherd in Spain. They're like, what's the most important job of a shepherd? And the shepherd says, very easy. You have to love the sheep. You have to love them. Because if you don't love them, it all goes off. Church, do you have a spiritual leader in your life? Do you have a pastor, an elder, an overseer, whatever you want to call it, same thing? Do you have someone in your life? If you're not a member here and you're visiting a church, just know when you come to a church, I am a functional Sunday lecturer to you, which is helpful. It's good to have to hear preaching and teaching, but that's the extent of what I am. What you actually need is a shepherd, somebody who knows you, somebody who can pray for you, someone who's there when stuff goes down in your life. That's why our church has a process called membership, where it's you're joining not just a community, but you're entrusting yourselves, like, we have shepherds in our lives now. If you are a member of this church, I'm sure some of you feel pastored, and some of you don't. Some of you feel like, yeah, like this is, I do feel shepherded. And some of you are like, Tom, where have you been in my life? Like, what's going on? And this is why it's really urgent that we can't just have one pastor. We can't just have one elder. No one person is supposed to do this. That's why elders in the New Testament is always plural. You're meant to have more. That's why we have elder nominees right now. We want to shepherd people. The goal of our church is every member feels like you have a shepherd in your life, that you feel personally pastored. And the reason why we don't feel that yet is because there's only one person doing that right now. That's my role, and I can't do that. We need other shepherds. And even if you have three, that's not enough. We need like 7 to 10 for us to feel like a church that's actually being shepherded. Also, we need people in this room, if you have this conviction, like, this is something I think I should do. Dude, this is the church that we want to have to happen. We need people to be shepherded here because this isn't the business. The goal is not to just get people in the doors and just get people's money and become this huge ministry. The goal is people who come with their joys and their wounds and they're being cared for, shepherded, and pointing them to Jesus. That's the type of church that we're trying to establish here. Because we believe that's what Peter says. Shepherd the flock among you. And at least the second point, which is what kind of spiritual leaders do we need, though? How do we shepherd? First Peter, he doesn't tell us who should shepherd. Titus and First Timothy talks about the qualifications. But he does describe what shepherding should look like. In verse 2 to 3, Peter gives principles of pretty much what godly leadership is. So again, if you find yourself not just as a leader in a church, but a parent, a school teacher, some with authority, these are principles that could apply to us as well, because this is what helps you lead like Jesus. The first principle is found in verse 2. Peter says, not under compulsion, but willingly. When you shepherd people, not under compulsion, but willingly. Imagine you are a manager at a company and they go, all right, new department, you're a manager, here's your team. These three people are your team, and you look at your team members and go like, oh God, these three. Or imagine you're a school teacher and you have a classroom, you're an elementary school teacher, 20, 30 kids, and you see the list and you look at the kids, you go, oh my gosh, these demons, they're my kids. Or imagine you're a community group leader and you got a list, go, hey, this is your community group. And you go, oh my gosh, he's in there. You have one or two options when you're in that situation. You can either do it because you have to. That's called compulsion. Or you can ask God, change my heart, oh God, because I want to do this willingly. Because I tell you, if you do things out of compulsion, everybody could tell. Everybody could tell if you're a community group leader that you don't want to be there. All your students, they can't articulate it, but they could tell we don't like them. Your team at work, they could tell we don't want to manage them. I could tell when I look at our volunteers, like, oh, man, I appreciate you being here, but you're doing this because you have to. Oh, you're leading praise, you're welcoming, you're doing parking, you're doing hospitality. You're doing all that because, like, you're kind of, who else is going to do it? That's like the spirit that you carry. And you know what happens when you have a spirit like that is you create, it's not just bad vibes, but you make Christianity and the church feel like this duty, this obligation, and that spirit just kind of happens in the room. Imagine a community group leader leading your group going, hey guys, we're in Cerritos. The reason why I'm leading this group, I have the only house in Cerritos, so let's make this work. Imagine being in a group like that versus you're in a community group going, hey, you, let's do this. I'm actually really looking forward to how this is going to work out. I don't know any of y'all, but I'm looking forward to see what happens. Which one's going to be more life-giving to you? Which one do you think is going to most likely succeed and be able to be something that works out? That's the big difference between McDonald's and Chick-fil-A, right? Dude, you could tell McDonald's, nobody wants to work there. You feel it, nobody wants, and the food just tastes worse because of that. Versus Chick-fil-A, it's like, man, I don't know if it's fake, but y'all want to be here. And the chicken tastes even better because y'all like feel this way. Like something about that happens, and in the church, all the more, like, can you imagine this genuine spirit of like, yeah, I want to be here. I really want to do this. That's a godly leader. That's leading like Jesus. Here's the thing Peter says. Not for personal gain, but eagerly. Lead, shepherd, not for personal gain, but do it eagerly. People often lead not because they want to serve the people, but so the people could serve them. Man, I remember when I was a college pastor, there was a person, they wanted to be president of this campus ministry. It was like springtime. College students, you know what I'm talking about. Like they're in the campus ministry and they were a leader, they're junior in college. And you know, around this time, it's like, who's going to be the president for the next year? And this person's like, oh, it might be me, but no, maybe not, but maybe. And like, you pray for me. I hope I could become this leader and like bless this ministry to the next level. And to his shock, it's like, dude, he got passed over. I have no idea why. He had no idea why, so he was not the president. And man, was he checked out. Like his senior year, just did not care about the ministry, barely showed up. And in fact, at one point, just dropped out altogether. Now, was he checked out because he said, oh, I really want to serve these people. Oh, that, I'm so bitter. Is that why he was checked out? Or was it something more? Like, I wanted that to be the president. The clout, the inner circle, the prestige. And again, a lot of us, if we're honest, that's what we want. We want clout. We want prestige. I heard so many times people say, I want to serve in this church so I can have friends and be in the inner circle. Nothing's wrong with that desire, but if that's your only desire, then as soon as you don't have that, you're done. Because you're doing it, if you're honest, for personal gain. Not because you really want to serve and help other people. Peter says, don't do that if you're a leader. Don't find leaders like that. Let them be shepherds who are eager to serve. Let me give you another story. There's a church that nominated a person to be an elder. And the problem was this person was really quiet and introverted. So not many people in the church knew him. So what happened was the vote, so they put his picture like, let's vote for him. Didn't get voted through. And so the elders, the leaders of the church are like, dude, like we totally think you should be a leader, but the church, what's going to happen? They thought he was going to leave the church. And the person said, dude, it's totally fine. I understand. People don't know me. I'm just going to serve as an elder anyways. Like, I'm just going to shepherd people. I'm just going to care for people. I don't need the title to do the work of a shepherd. I'm just like, dude, have you ever heard a story like that? Like where somebody's like, I don't need the title. I'm just going to do it. That's what Peter's talking about. It's not about you, but the type of people who are godly leaders in the church, who are Jesus-like leaders, you do it for the other person. And lastly, Peter says, not domineering, but exemplifying. Domineering, it's literally to exercise power over someone under leadership. Peter's like, don't do that. Have you ever been in an environment or a room where someone's leading? It could be a jury selection. It could be in your workplace, or it could be, my goodness, in a church setting. And the person who's leading, like, you're power tripping. You're just like trying to control everything. And the reason why is because a lot of us, people actually want to become leaders by just having power and not doing any of the work. Like I remember, it's so vivid in my brain, going to a youth retreat where I was guest speaking, and all the youth leaders like, hey kids, read your Bible, make sure you pay attention to worship, sit in the front. And so all the youth kids are in the front, and all the youth teachers, they're just in the back, like just talking to each other, walking around the hallways and so forth. During the actual worship time, they're not paying attention to us on their phones. During game time, they're just watching the kids play. During the informal time, they're just cliquish with all the other youth leaders. And I was like, man, this youth retreat's weird. Like, there's something off. And why are these guys even leading you? Like, who are they? First, I've been to another retreat with youth leaders. Man, during worship, the youth leaders all up front. They're the most engaged in worship. All of them during the game time, they're the ones bringing the hype. All of them during the informal time, you can't even tell who's a student. They're just amongst them. That was awesome. That was awesome to see. Peter says these are the best type of spiritual leaders. They're not just trying to control from the back, but they are among the people. They are normal Christians who are following Jesus, and they're just doing that. Those are the types of people you should find. And this is where, for me personally, I worry sometimes for churches, including our church, about older members, tenured members, former leaders. A lot of us sometimes come into church thinking we're above this stuff. Like, I've heard everything Pastor Tom had to say. I've heard all these songs. I've been familiar with all these ministries. I could just roam the hallways outside during Sunday worship, and, you know, I'm not missing much. I could go to the bathroom and just be like, it doesn't really matter. I don't really need community. We're just kind of like above and removed from everything that's kind of happening because we think we know better. The analogy that our staff uses, we think we're like these black belts in a jiu-jitsu class. Like, I already know these moves. I don't need to have, what's things, who, what are you going to teach me? And what's really sad is churches like this, you know who the most hungry are? The most starved spiritually, it's the new people. It's like, man, these new people, the people who are new, they are so excited about Jesus. I haven't felt that in a long time. I say, yeah, that's really sad. And especially if they're going to be your leaders, the ones who are checked out, that's when you find a church that's like, oh, the Spirit of God left. Because you're relying upon young, new Christians to lead a charge, while those who are meant to step up, we're all just kind of checked out. Because we are above all this Christian stuff. We've been churched. We know how the sausage is made. So we sit in the back. We don't really care. We're arms removed. By the way, no comment. If you're sitting in the back, I'm not trying to talk about you. But you know what I mean. Like, metaphorically, we're sitting in the back and so forth. And that's just our posture. And that's not the way, at least in the church, it's supposed to look like. Peter says, shepherd the church as an example. Be an example. Be amongst the flock. The word example is literally be a template. Let the people imitate those who are leaders in this church. And Jesus says this why, or Peter says this why, because this is how Jesus leads. This is how Jesus shepherded. Verse 4, look what Peter says. When the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory. Who is this chief shepherd? It's Jesus. And Jesus, he wasn't in the back room making decisions. He wasn't in the back going, oh yeah, you read your Bible. Jesus was amongst the people, always sharing and opening his home, people, entering people's homes. Always sharing life with them, even though he is the Messiah. No one's too small for him to spare his time with. And that's why, and Jesus, he identifies himself this way. In John chapter 10, he says this, this is Jesus talking, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand, since he is not the shepherd and doesn't own the sheep, he leaves them and runs away when he sees a wolf coming. I am the good shepherd. I lay down my life for the sheep. Imagine if we had leaders like this. Imagine that this church, if we had leaders who were like, dude, I'm doing this not because I have to, but I actually really want to do this. I'm glad to do this. I'm here, I want to help you. I don't need the title. You don't even know I'm a leader. I just want to help people here. Imagine people, I just want to be like Jesus here. Easy to follow people like that. Dude, it's just easy to follow people like that. And it makes me so sad that for a majority of us here, even if you grew up in the church, so rare to experience people like that. Like, my community group made me so sad, not on purpose, but we're just asking, like, hey, have you ever had, like, elders in your church? Like, what was that like? Man, it's mainly like, dude, the elders, they were, like, power hungry. I saw them fist fight once. Man, the elders, I didn't even know who they were. Not a single one had a positive thing to say about the elders that they grew up with. Not a single person in all their years in the church. And I can't help but now understand, oh, this is why OC churches are the way they are. The models that we had, they are not the type of shepherds that Jesus calls to have. The models that we have are people who want power, people who are just ordering people to do, people are like, I have to do it, so I guess I'll do it. It just permeates in the church. I totally get it, and it made me really sad, and it made me hope, can something happen different here? Can we have shepherds who actually want a shepherd? Can we have leaders who actually care about the people? Where they actually impact people's lives for the positive? Can this be a moment 10 years from now we look back, go, you know, 10 years ago I had a church where I had shepherds and elders, and yeah, they actually really modeled Jesus well for me. How would that, wouldn't that be something we all would love to have? And yet it's so hard to imagine because we just haven't experienced that. We need godly leaders, and you don't have to be a church leader to do this. Some of you, again, you're a parent. You're a manager, you're a teacher. Are you leading like the world, or are you leading like Jesus? You have an opportunity every day not to lead out of, oh, I have to do this, or out of greed, or out of a domineering nature, but willing, eager examples. Those of you leading in church ministries, community groups, ministry leads, are you leading like Christ in this church? Or are you leading like the world? My main observation about our church serving cultures of majority, and again, I understand, like I totally get it, but we do it out of duty. I have to do this. I'm doing this as a favor to him. Doing this as a favor to her. If I don't do it, then, you know, that's kind of like the posture I think a lot of us have. And again, we have to grow in conviction, not just in doing it. Otherwise, this church's spirit is just not going to move forward. And members, if you're a member of this church, as we prepare for elders, the main elders we should find is not those with the most social clout. It's not those who are the most gifted. It's those who are willing, eager, exemplifying Jesus. That's the type of elders that we want. We want this to be a Jesus church. And that leads to our last point, which is, how should we relate to our spiritual leaders? Peter, he was like, elders, shepherd, shepherd, shepherd. And all of a sudden, he's not done. He goes, now in light of that, let me talk to the rest of y'all. He says in verse 5, in the same way, you who are younger. You are younger. I would argue that he's not talking about age. He's talking about position. Just like elders are not necessarily older in age. Younger, he's not talking about younger people. He's talking about your position. Pretty much the rest of the church, all of you. I have something to say to you, and the reason why is because, do you know the main reason why pastors and elders leave a church? The main reason why they get stressed out? The main reason why they resign and step down? Do you know the main reason why? It's not because they're tired of preaching and teaching. It's usually not because of the budget and like they're stressed out about that. It's the people. It's the people. It's when life is discouraging with people. This is why churches die because spiritual leaders are messed up. But churches also die because the congregation, they're not willing to let the leaders lead. They're messed up. And so you need both of them to dance. Both have to be part of this dance. And Peter talks about how, hey, if you have shepherds, this is a mutual relational thing that's going on, and we each have a role, and Peter has an exhortation to the rest of the church. For the church to have elders, Peter says, first of all, you as a church, one simple call, submit to your spiritual leaders. Look at verse 5. In the same way, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Now, as I said that word even, I was like, ugh, subject, submission. It's a potty word in today's culture. To submit to somebody, to listen. It's almost like we hate that because we confuse submission with subservience. To be subservient is you always agree with the leaders. Hey, we're doing this. You better do it. Okay, and you know that's being a faithful member. We think that's what Peter's saying, which is not what he's saying at all. The word submission, when you break it down, a Greek compound word means under and arrange. It's for you to arrange yourself under someone's leadership, which if you think about that, that actually gives you a lot of autonomy. That gives you a lot of agency, where I'm going to choose to follow this person's lead. In other words, what does it mean to submit to leadership? It means you're letting them shepherd and care for you. If the main role of an elder is to shepherd you, then the main role is, and I'm going to let you do it. Imagine you are part of a community group, and you go, or by community groups, if you're not familiar, it's a group where we meet, 12 of us, midweek at our church, share life. Imagine you go, and every week, you know, you go, I'll go if I can, and you skip like half the meetings. Imagine the times you do go, you're like, oh yeah, work is fine, pray for my work, and that's all you share. And imagine that's the whole year, and at the end of the year, you send a survey going, oh, my community group didn't love me. They didn't care for me. They weren't there for me for all my problems. Dude, how can they love you? How can they care for you? You open zero about your life. That is so unfair. You made life so hard probably for them by just closing out your life. Submitting means not that you aren't allowed to disagree. It means you're letting people, especially the elders, care for you, shepherding you. I message some of y'all, if you're a member, I say, hey, how can I pray for you? Some of you write an essay to me, and you're like, I'm so sorry, I just like spilled my life. I'm like, I love it. I love it. Tell me more. Because it helps me to know how to pray for you, how to relate to you. Some of you, the way you respond, like, I'm good, thanks. I'm just like, huh, I don't know what to do with you. I have zero idea what to do with you. Let the shepherd shepherd you. That's what Peter is saying. And secondly, well, how do you let them shepherd you? Like, what does submission look like? And I love in verse 5 how Peter starts. Look at verse 5, what he says. In the same way, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. What does that mean, the same way? What is Peter talking about? Susie Soak, she's a teacher in New York, she says, what Peter means is the way elders shepherd the congregation, you congregation, follow the elders that way. The exact same way. Meaning how? Not under compulsion, but willingly. Like in verse 2. Nothing's worse than trying to convince people to follow Jesus than when you don't want to follow Jesus. Nothing is more life-draining when this attitude of like, oh, I guess I'll come to Sunday. It's better be good. I guess I'll support the vision of church, if it makes sense. I guess I'll serve this ministry, if you need me. It's like, man, like, that is not fun to lead. Like, that is really hard when you just feel that from people. Peter's saying, dude, willingly, meaning give it a try. Like, be Chick-fil-A for a moment. Be like, okay, I got this. Like, just for a moment, give it a try. I'm going to engage with what they're doing and follow their lead. That's why I'm here. That's what it means to be like Jesus, to follow that way. Not under compulsion, but willingly. Not for personal gain, Peter says, but eagerly. I'll go to this prayer gathering, but the food better be good. I'll go to this event, but my friends better be there. I'll go to this church setting, but I better be worth it. In other words, oh, it better be good for you. And that's kind of the attitude that we carry. We call it consumerism. And Peter's like, dude, don't do that. Not in the church. Do that at McDonald's. Do that at the mall. But in the church of God, don't do that. Let there be an eager spirit, Peter says. What can I do to help? There's a prayer gathering. Hey, can I set up a sign? Like, what can I do? There's no, the tech support doesn't work. All good. I'm not even there for that. It's all good. Eagerly. And lastly, Peter says, not domineering, but exemplifying. For some of us here, we think the longer we're here, the more that we serve, the more power we have, and the church to listen to us. You know how long I've been at this church? I've been here longer than you. How dare you say to the church to do this? You know how much I've served at this church? You know how much little honor I've had? And you want to do this as a church? Dude, how dare you? Do you know how much money I gave to this church building? You know how much finances and tithing I've given? This wouldn't even be a church if it wasn't for me. Dude, we are so tempted, and it's only when stuff goes down, we wield our tenure, our faithfulness as a weapon, and we just hammer people and leaders, and even the context of church, and all of y'all who've been in church, you know what I'm talking about. We've seen that happen. It could happen in any generation. And Peter's like, dude, don't do that. Give, serve, participate simply because of Jesus. And Peter, he says submit in this way because he knows this is not natural. Our natural tendency in any group setting, especially if there are leaders involved, is for us to grumble, for us to complain, for us to sneer, for us to have like our arms crossed, you know, checking it out, critical spirit. That is the natural posture of people. And the reason why that's our natural posture is we just struggle trusting people to have authority over us. And yet imagine a child who never submitted themselves to anybody. Imagine a child who they never listened to their parents, never submitted to them. Some of you know exactly which children I'm talking about. There are kids like that. So a child who never submits to their teachers, who never, as they grow up, submits to any professor, any manager, always complaining, always pushing back. Do you know what you call a person like that? Pathway to narcissism. That's a pathway to narcissism when that's the way we follow. It's very similar for Christians to be spiritual narcissists. Every church, something's wrong with it. There's something wrong with this church. Every pastor, every eldership, something's weird about them. Every community group leader, there's something off of this. And that's kind of the pathway that you are going. That's like a pathway of spiritual narcissism. You can't submit to anybody. Submission doesn't mean you're willing. It doesn't mean like, oh, everything's great. It means like, I'm willing to let go of my rights, to follow the lead of what God's trying to do here. And as long as I think God's trying to do things here, I'm going to follow the lead. If things ever get crazy, that's another story. But a lot of us here, we have a hard time doing that. This is where Peter's exhortation is, and how do we fight that spiritual narcissism? Have spiritual leaders in your life. Let yourself be shepherded. And the reason why this helps us be like Jesus is because Jesus, he wasn't just Jesus because he shepherded the flock. Jesus, on his earthly life, submitted to the Heavenly Father. It was submission, his humility, that made him Jesus in this life. And to be like Jesus, we are not just meant to lead and shepherd, but to humble ourselves. That's why Peter tells us in verse 5, clothe yourselves with humility. That's the only way you could do this. It's your pride that's making you disgruntled. There's always pride when any type of church is going through some type of conflict that's taking place. And so, the final exhortation to us, all of us here, you're all going to be leading in some arenas of your life, church, work, home. You're all going to be following church life home. It's going to happen different seasons. What are some ways for you to follow Jesus? Can I just exhort for people in our church a couple of things? Can you encourage your leaders, those of us who are here? Like, let me ask all the community group members. Have you ever messaged your community group leader going, hey, man, thanks for opening up your home. It's not easy vacuuming before you come. It's not easy having plates ready, drinks ready. It's not easy. You know, we make a mess and we have to, you know, you clean up probably. Thank you for doing that. Like, have you ever done that? It's not even on our radar, right? It's just a given. Thank your leaders. Appreciate them. I promise you no one else is doing it. No one else is doing it. And how life-giving would it be for you to just say a word of affirmation? Those of you serving in a ministry, dude, have you ever thanked your ministry lead? You know, it's not easy when volunteers, they have to find you and volunteer. And again, I understand, but last minute, Sunday morning, I can't make it today. It's like, it's really burdensome. And again, we gladly absorb that. But it's really easier to absorb when in the midst of all the weeks, to say, hey, thanks for doing this. It's not easy. Being a leader is not easy. Can we be a church that encourages people who lead, gives life and honor people who lead? Would you support people? Support those who are leading. I've heard this from people on staff and community group leaders, the most discouraging thing is you have a group thread and you send a long message, hey group, da, da, da. It's seen by like 30 people, not a single person gives a thumbs up. Not a single person responds. It's just like this empty, like, oh man, like, am I annoying people? Am I bothering them? I don't want to be a leader. And you just kind of, your head goes different places. Nobody said anything, but you just can't help but think that way. And yet all of us are guilty, right? We've all seen those messages, group threads. We see it. We don't say anything. And we just go to whatever's needed. Man, could you support people? Make it a joy. Hebrews says, make it a joy for people to lead you. The previous generation, they wanted to lead because everyone honored them. Our present generation, nobody honors. And that's why nobody wants to be a leader these days. What if we were a culture where we honor people? And it's not like this grandiose honor. It's a thumbs up. It's a, hey man, thank you. Little things like that is what creates a culture where people are just leading with joy. And lastly, can we trust? Can we trust those who lead us? You know, we have good reasons not to trust people. We do our own thing. But man, let the church be a training ground for you to learn to trust again. Again, I get it. There's some leaders who jacked you, who hurt you. They're not worthy of trust. And a church is messed up when there's no one trustworthy. But you know what else makes a church messed up? When the church is not willing to trust anybody. We're all skeptical. Trust, no one could earn it fully. It's ultimately a gift that we give to those who have any type of authority, any type of lead that they have over us. What if we became a church like that? There's so much to talk about, which is why we're doing a series. We have a Q&A afterwards about specifically more church detailed stuff. If you want to stick around afterwards to talk about that. We have talks that we want to talk about this as well. We are going to pray for our leaders this upcoming evening in our prayer gathering. But can I just invite us to take a moment where we're going to pray a little bit individually. But can I pray for us, and then we're going to take a little bit of space in light of the message to pray as a church. So let's all pray together.